Okay, it is September 16th, Thursday, 2004. Jim Stern is here with me this afternoon, and we're going to do an oral history dealing with the Institute. And this will be Jim's observations on what happened and why. Jim, let me begin by asking you to say something about your background before you arrived here, and then when you did come, and your involvement.
Well, I came in the back door. I had gotten a PhD from Berkeley in 1954, and was offered the splendid salary of about $3,000 per academic year at Michigan State by Charlie Killingsworth, who told me he was hiring some number of new PhDs, and he expected to retain only half of them. Now, as a newly trained economist, I did not think that was the most worthwhile job. And since I was on a leave of absence from the Auto Workers Union, I returned to work with the Auto Workers Union and worked with them from 1954 to 62. In 1962, I was approached by the University of Michigan, who out of the blue asked whether I'd like to join their faculty, and made a very generous offer, a full professorship without going through the whole rigmarole. And I was mulling it over. My wife said, well, what'd you get a PhD for? You've worked for the government, you've worked for unions. You said you wanted to work for a university. And I said, well, I'll think about it. And I went back out to California, where I was negotiating a labor agreement with the major aircraft company out there. And all of a sudden, I got a phone call from Wisconsin, asking, was it true? Was I leaving? And I knew the people here through the School for Workers. And they said, well, why don't you drop by? And all of a sudden, I got an invitation to speak at a conference at Wingspread in Racine, did so. And while there, this guy with sort of strange eyes and white hair came up and said, you're a wonderful man, so on, we're going to get you. And I didn't know what was going on. Bob Ozam was there, and Jerry Summers and Dave Johnson. So all of a sudden, I got an invitation to Wisconsin. And while sitting on the Union Terrace, received an even better offer from Wisconsin than I had gotten from Michigan, with an appointment in the School for Workers plus Econ and IR. And this was my heart's desire, so I said yes right off the bat.
So then you arrived here when, in the fall of 62?
That's right.
Yeah. And so were you immediately heavily involved in the Institute?
Yes, this is a little bit embarrassing. When I came here, I was naive about university life, and I planned to do teaching. I do courses in the School for Workers and in Econ, and I was basically two-thirds in the School for Workers. But Peter Steiner at a party told me that that isn't what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to get grants and do research. So I said, okay. So I called my buddies over in Detroit and said, what's hot these days? And they said, well, the most interesting thing is the reduction in job opportunities for blue-collar workers and the increase in jobs for white-collar workers. Mm-hmm. And so I put a grant application into the Department of Labor, and they approved it and gave me a nice sum of money, over $100,000, to study the movement from blue to white-collar workers. And I put it through the IR, through the Institute, at which point School for Workers got mad at me. Not immediately, but over the next couple of years, because they didn't like the idea of one-third, one-third, one-third. So essentially, they kicked me out. I can't remember when. But then I went full-time into Econ, spending most of my time on IR stuff. I'm sorry now, what was your exact question?
What was your involvement in the Institute after you arrived here?
Well, I got this grant.
Right, yeah.
Probably in the 62, 63 year.
Right.
And put the grant through the IR. And this was helpful. Jerry was getting grants then, too.
Yes.
And then
you were teaching in IR
courses. I was teaching
courses.
Econ courses, but these were the ones that were really in the field of labor economics, labor relations.
Right.
And also, the first interesting course, graduate course I had, was a collective bargaining seminar taught jointly with the law school. And it had been held by Ed Witte beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
They said I could have this when I came, which again caused some problems because Reed Tripp and others have probably wanted to succeed Witte.
Yeah.
And here's this newcomer coming in who's given this very famous seminar.
And so then you taught that regularly?
Yeah. For, close to 30 years.
Yeah. And you co-taught it usually with somebody else, right?
In the beginning, I taught it, and from law school, there would be Nate Feinstein.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nate picked up Abner Brody, and then when Nate quit, Abner took it over, and I taught with them. And then I got Dave Johnson in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we hired Jim Jones in IR law, and he wanted in on it. That's pretty much the history of it. When I retired, Jim took it over.
Yeah. So to what extent were you involved in, there were a master's program in industrial relations and also the PhD program. What was your involvement, or wasn't it too clear what you were involved in? The PhD part of the program or the master's?
Well, there was no real separation.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
People who were getting a master's degree, if they were any good, went on to the PhD.
Yeah.
And as I recall, we required the master's first, as opposed to econ, where the master's was given as a goodbye degree.
Yes.
So that all of a sudden, I guess I had some students who were getting PhDs, and I was on committees, and was a major professor, and had master's and PhD students.
And then you became director in the late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, 1968, I guess. Forgot why. I guess Jerry went off someplace.
Well, he became department chairman in 68.
Was that what it
was?
Yes. Okay.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
And he drafted me then to run the Institute.
And then I recall you were running it in, I think, in the early, several years into the early 70s, I think when I was econ chairman.
I ran it from 68 to 71, and then I did a second term sometime later on.
Later on.
Probably when you were chair.
Well, that's, I was chair from 72 until 75.
No, it must have been after that.
Maybe when I was director. That was 83 to 87.
I did a second three-year stint, and the records.
That's right. Right before I became IR director.
Right.
Yeah, late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
Yeah. How would you describe the general atmosphere in the Institute? Let's say when you came, and then into the 70s.
Well, when I came, it was very low key. It was a program, not an institute. It had been founded by these six professors, and they were giving a committee degree. And during the time before I became director, and I'm not sure when this is, sometime in the 60s is when it moved from a committee degree to a institutionalized graduate school approved degree. But my first reaction was that this was a very strange group. I gave my first seminar had been here a month. George Strether was chairing it. And there was some man in the audience who heckled a little bit. But then when I finished, he gave a speech. And coming fresh from the union movement, I was surprised to find him saying that I was a fascist, I was a union breaker, and so forth. Apparently this was because I said for public employees they should have arbitration rather than the right to strike. This man was well known on campus as being sort of eccentric. His name was Professor K.U. Smith.
Oh, yes.
So that this was my introduction to the Institute in terms of the idea of giving new professors a chance to give a seminar.
What about, well, when did the graduate program really accelerate with many more PhD students? Wasn't that toward the late 60s?
Yeah, I was successful in getting grants. Jerry Summers was successful in getting grants. And somehow or other, the word got around.
Right.
And this became a popular field.
Mm-hmm.
One illustration I can give you is when the in the 60s, the Department of Transportation was putting federal funds into bus lines and bus companies and wanted a study done of what was involved. And I wasn't interested in this particularly, but I get four or five graduate students together and I said, if you want, we'll go get the grant and you guys have to do all the work.
Yeah.
And I forgot, let's see, there was Rubenfeld, Craig Olson was a little involved, but he also had something on health and safety. The guy from the South who went to Cleveland State, who was that? Blonde-haired kid. We can look him up. But at any rate, I think there must have been five of them drawing funds from this transit grant. And I think Jerry had a bunch of students, so that we were fairly flush. Also, we had from the grad school a few project assistantships because we had no teaching assistants.
Yeah.
And this helped us. And the master's students also were supported in part. Barb Ash had some money, as I remember.
Yeah, and Jerry Summers had a lot of money, all this manpower money just pouring in.
Right.
And then that VOCAD Center that he set up with Ken Little.
Right.
And that ran, I guess, until...
Yeah, and the big Ford grant, and the start of the Journal of Human Resources.
That's right. Yeah. Well, as I recall, it was a very lively group of IR PhD students, Kokin and Zimmerman and that whole crew.
Right.
Very, and have, most of them have done very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I remember in 71, I changed the curriculum a little bit, and I made the students take a course in computers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman named Priscilla Tempest.
Oh, yes.
Organized an armed opposition to this. She did not want to have anything to do with computers. And people like Ken Miracle and others were in this class.
Yeah.
And they weren't sure which side they were on. I was the mean professor because we used punch cards in those days. They had to go down into the lab and put the punch cards through the sorters. And the idea of running regressions was just beyond their kin.
Yeah.
And this was the change toward mathematical labor economics.
Right.
And I enjoyed that as I looked
at it.
And we dropped the old course that we used to have, which was orientation. By bringing in professors, each one would give a lecture.
Yeah.
And instead, we gave them material.
Mm-hmm.
And during my tenure there, they had to learn about the computer in the first semester.
Now, as I recall, you were the person who worked out, I think, with Steve Kleene to actually get some lines on the budget for IR. As I recall, in the 60s, people taught whatever they wanted to teach. Barbash and Roseanne and all of you were teaching courses that were really, in a sense, for IR students, although econ people took them as well. But the department made no distinction. If you, we taught what you wanted to teach, and nobody was worried about the turf.
Right.
And but somewhere along the line, I think it was you, got Cleaney to allocate a few budget lines.
Well, I think what I did, with your help possibly, is to just move half of myself, a part of Jerry, and a couple of other, maybe a part of Johnson,
mm-hmm.
or a part of Barbash.
Yeah,
probably.
Barbash, yeah.
Because
and Castle, too, probably.
Yeah, because they were teaching
yes.
IR courses.
Right.
And that seemed to get approved. And I think Clinty may have checked with Ed Young. He once told me that he didn't know what the Institute was, how it got there, and so on. He
yeah.
would just check back with Ed,
yeah.
who was, what was he, chancellor at
yeah,
that time?
Yeah, he was, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so the budget lines got there
yeah.
just by moving bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is still being done in other ways. I guess Nichols moved part of himself out of Econ over to
the
LaFollette.
Into LaFollette, yes,
yeah.
right. But at that time, we had no lines at all, as I recall.
That's right.
And we had no departmental status.
Right.
Whereas LaFollette has both. And so I always...
And LaFollette has money from the legislature.
Yeah,
which
that's right.
Big
well, they have lines there from the state. But I figured, as I recall, you, with your deftness, somehow snaked this through the system, and it was to the IR's great advantage that we had those lines.
Oh.
It meant that those courses could be taught, even though the department may have taken a harder line on, you know, what are they doing for us?
Well, I think, basically, though, we had the people,
yes,
the faculty.
We did. Right.
And they had tenure,
mm-hmm.
so they had to teach something.
Right.
And we usually let them teach what they wanted.
Right.
So, for example, when Caslow was here, we had two foreign labor courses,
yeah.
mainly because that's what he wanted to
yeah.
teach. And there were students from many departments who would take his
mm-hmm.
courses. These
mm-hmm.
were popular
yes.
courses for upper division or master's
mm-hmm.
students. And, IR probably supplied 12 to 15 bodies
mm-hmm.
for each of these classes. And
yeah.
then Econ, Poli-Sci,
right.
Soc, and the others put students in. So
filled
there was
out.
Never any concern about them.
Yeah.
These were popular classes.
Yeah. What do you think was the impact of Jerry Summers' death in, what, December 1977?
Yeah.
He had been such a key
well, I
person.
Think if Jerry had not died, I think he would have figured out a way to give us a tenure track.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact we did not give a tenure track is really the thing that caused our demise
yeah.
in the long run.
Right. As I recall, weren't we going in for a tenure granting authority just after he died?
Yes.
It was being set up and then poof, he was gone. And then it just, I think Bob Lehman was one of the people who was not at all keen on this and raised questions about it in the planning, Academic Planning Council.
Well, Bob Baldwin and Bob Lampman were two of the guys who saw a disproportionate influence in the department of the new mathematicians if
mm-hmm.
the IR people left.
Ah.
He didn't want Johnson, Barbash, right. Stern, Caslow,
right.
and so on to be in IR because these were people who generally supported
right.
public finance,
yeah.
international
mm-hmm.
trade, and so on.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, I forgot whether it was Baldwin who told me this flat out one
mm-hmm.
time, or Bob, but this was clearly
mm-hmm.
part of their motivation,
mm-hmm.
that they did not want the department to all of a sudden be overwhelmed
yeah.
by the mathematical types.
Yeah.
Eigner, Day,
yeah.
and so on.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, I'd always thought that was Bob had some ambivalence about it, but I didn't, not from this angle.
Oh, I think he had an ambivalence
yeah.
about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Bob was very traditional.
Yes.
And believed in strong departments.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't want any part of the department
mm-hmm.
to leave to secede because it changed things around as far as he was concerned.
Hmm. Then we, I think we were very close to getting tenure-granting status in the mid-80s when I was director. The outside, or the review committee, LNS review committee, recommended it very strongly. But then because IES had been given tenure without authority, I guess the chancellor was trying to unravel that. And so Dave Cronin said, well, let's hold off, the time is not ripe. Meanwhile, we were able to, you know, hire Streck and Craig and Zondermann. And so it seemed to take the pressure off. But then we probably should have followed up again after Craig took over to try to nail that down.
Yeah, that illustrates why we had our problem. Because when these individuals left, we had nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Because the hiring was still back
in
the social department, the history department, and so on. And, for example, in history, we could have gotten that guy from Cornell who won.
Oh, yeah, Salvatore.
Right.
Yeah.
Who had just won the Bancroft Prize for his book on Gompers.
Yeah.
And Dave had no objections as the dean, but the history committee.
Yeah.
Somehow or other, wanted instead a new assistant. They didn't want a full professor coming in.
Yeah.
And so as a result, we didn't get Salvatore.
I remember, I think I was director then.
Yeah.
He seemed like a very attractive guy, but history would not buy him. And then they got this assistant professor, Zondermann, who was fine and all, but then didn't get tenure.
Right.
And oddly enough, they weren't really reviewing him the way they should have been. We were doing very careful review of him.
Right.
And I think embarrassed him into action. Mm-hmm. And then his record, well, it was fine, but not that strong. So you retired when?
Well, technically.
Technically,
as
late
80s? Well, no, as Don Nichols pointed out, I have the distinction of going into the hospital as a tenured professor and coming out retired. Because I went in for an operation in January of 85.
Yeah.
And then had negotiated in advance with Cronin a 5-year contract on a half-time basis, which permitted me to teach first semester here and second semester in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So from 86 to 91, I was still very active, but I was half-time.
Mm-hmm. But then you continued teaching beyond that, didn't you?
No.
Oh, really?
No, I quit in 91.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay, so from your vantage point as an academic staff member and then retirement, what did you feel was going on in the Institute? Or maybe you don't have a good sense for it. But I remember you were involved in some of the discussions of reacting to the strategic plan. And there was some committee of people very unhappy with the Institute in the early 90s. Very articulate guy who went to IBM. Anyway, you were the...
I was probably on the fringes.
Utility.
I don't have any great memory of those days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's see, who was director then? I mean, we had Craig, my last important involvement was getting Paula Goose.
Well, that occurred in 1980.
Right, yeah.
And, but you were still involved in...
Well, we got Craig, but that was...
We got Craig, and then I was director and we got Streck.
Right.
And Zondermann. And then next year, I guess they got Zeitlin.
Right.
But I seem to remember you coming to meetings. Remember Crawford had the strategic plan, Mansky and Pilyabin were in this committee recommended, gave terrible review to IR. They didn't like the interdisciplinary programs. And I remember you coming in and helping counter that.
Yeah, I remember being called and say, please attend such and such a meeting. And at each meeting, it was pretty clear that we faced a very uphill battle. That industrial relations was not considered a discipline. It didn't have a standing like sociology or economics. Was not attracting students who were extraordinarily bright. They met Wisconsin standards, but 10 or 15 years earlier, we were getting students who were the most outstanding, people with double 800s, whose interest was in the labor field. But as interest in unions diminished, the quality of students diminished. And also, I think in the business school, there was a pickup under organizational behavior and so forth.
And by then, econ people had largely deserted, or retired, rather.
That's right.
Mid-80s, Ozan, Lampman, you, or somebody else.
Paula Boos was only with you, the only two, and then when you retired.
Yeah, Casalo, they all retired about the same time.
Right.
And so then the business school became the dominant group of faculty in the program.
Right.
So partly demography, in a way. And then we couldn't replace these people.
That's
that was the difficulty.
There weren't similar professors coming, potential professors coming along, because interest in the field had abated. And these people were becoming finance.
And going where the money was.
Yeah.
And I remember teaching a class, labor wage class, in maybe late 80s. And I had everybody write a paper on what kind of occupation they'd like to go into. It was maybe 60, 70 students. And about 25 of them wanted to become investment bankers. That was the big thing right then. And, you know, maybe they made fortunes, I don't know. But there were these kind of fads that would come and go about, I'm not sure, dot-com was a big thing in 1995 or 96. So one interpretation then is that industrial relations was a very important field of study growing out of World War II with all the people involved in arbitration, the power of unions, and then as that abated, it was hard to bring in new blood because the interests had shifted. And so it died, you might almost say, a natural death.
Yeah, except it was encouraged to die by LNS, which really acted somewhat meanly, if I understand what happened. Keep in mind, I was long retired by this time, but at different meetings, I heard people say such things as the business school would have taken it, that Barry
Gerhardt
would have been willing to be the director of the institute, but LNS rejected him because his salary was too high. Now, if that's true, that's very small. And then when business was willing to take it, LNS was willing to let the name go, but the help, the space, the money that we had all accumulated was going to be used by LNS to take care of their budget problems. And they had plenty of budget problems.
They did.
It was very convenient for them to kill the institute rather than to let it slide over into business.
What's interesting about doing this is hearing different people, their analysis of what happened. Let's say I've talked to Halaby, Charlotte, and Ken Miracle, Don Schwab, John Witte, you, and then tomorrow I'm talking to Glenn. And then I plan to arrange somehow to call Paula Boos and Craig to get their impressions. And I probably should talk to Barry, and probably Zeitlin too.
Yeah, Barry and Zeitlin, but I think you should also talk to Phil Certain and Judy Craig.
Yes. Now, actually, Barry Tyker, who runs the Oral History Project, he has scheduled a big interview with Cronin. But he's done part of it already, and a big one with Phil Certain this fall. So he will pick up some of that, but it wouldn't hurt for me to try to do that too.
You know, I think ever since our crop of students in the 60s, in effect, took over the Teaching Assistants Association.
That's right.
Made it viable and did a very good job. That this annoyed the administration that had to deal with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not part of academic planning to take this into account.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anybody felt a great sigh of, I don't think they felt any displeasure over seeing the Institute done.
Yeah. And, that's interesting. Yeah, it's one of these intangible factors, but probably in the back of their minds.
Yeah. You have to remember that they were the leaders and that they did some things that were rather nasty. Irv Shane, for example, was on the chemistry dock when the TAs were picketing and pushed him aside and wouldn't let the trucks come in and get chemicals. And he was quite annoyed about it.
Mm-hmm.
And those who had rocks through their windows got annoyed. I didn't, only because I was off skiing and didn't even know that the rocket had been thrown through a window.
Yeah.
But I think this had something to do with it.
Troublemakers. And then we had people like your student who never finished.
Marchetti?
Marchetti, yeah.
Well, he was the chief troublemaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, in a sense, was my fault because I was teaching a seminar. And I thought it would be interesting to listen to these non-IR students who were running this thing.
Yeah.
The fellow over in Spanish, people who were in English.
IR
had nothing to do with
it. Hasslinger, wasn't he?
Haslick,
that's
he
right.
He was there, and a fellow whose father or something was head of the Communist Party at one time. What was his name? Was it Browder? Yeah, I think so. I think he was among the radicals who were going to tell the university what it was going to do.
Yeah.
And our IR students found them impractical and moved in and took over and mobilized a very efficient anti-university effort, anti-university administration effort. They thought that university really ought to take different stances. But that's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story, and that's probably captured in this earlier interview that you did with Laura Smale.
Possibly.
Yeah. Did Judy Craig ever interview you? She wrote this thesis on the TAA.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably, some of it might be there too.
Yeah. And also, somebody who was a Vice Chancellor under Ed Young,
Serena Pondra.
Serena Pondra also.
Oh, that's right.
Did a piece on the TAA.
Right.
Ed asked me to review it.
Yeah.
And I had some questions about it.
Right.
Because it was written from the point of view of the professor who felt that unionization of faculty was bad.
Yeah.
And unionization, therefore, of teaching assistants was bad.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I remember she bludgeoned some committee into agreeing that you could be 5 years on the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember fighting that hard. You know, the idea was to get people out of here in 4 years. And I think it was going into 6 years, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she was a very determined person and pushed it through. What do you see as the future of industrial relations as a field of study at places like Cornell, Illinois, Michigan State? I guess those are the three big programs.
Well, I think
they can survive?
Oh, yeah. I think they'll survive because there are jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They will have big master's programs.
Yeah.
But corporate structures include more and more IR types because they've got problems about age discrimination,
right.
Race discrimination. Disability problems, then health insurance and pensions are key issues in our society. Therefore, you need trained people who can operate in those fields. And business schools can do it, but on certain campuses, they've set up separate institutes with their own faculty who, in effect, do this for the business school. So the business school can head more toward finance and other areas. Now, this particular role for IR is not one that is attractive in the eyes of the humanities people in LNS, for example. It's vocational education.
Yeah, right.
And as such, is looked down upon by people in English literature.
Right.
And,
but interestingly also, IR students were far more interesting than the business school students doing the HR program.
They were more interested in
HR? More interesting people. Our students, I thought, were very wide-ranging, very able, and had a broad background, so they could come at issues, I thought, more effectively than people in the business schools, many of whom had taken undergraduate business degrees and were just filled with all of this stuff, and then getting more at the graduate level.
Yeah, the IR people were more sophisticated, were broader, and from what you were saying, they would be more attractive to the LNS faculty than a business school student, just as you found them more attractive, and I guess I did too. I hadn't thought about that.
So, IRRI will continue, but at a reduced level. And I see that Berkeley and UCLA, their money was cut out, but I guess some of that's been restored for their worker ed programs. But if it was cut once, where there's smoke, there's fire, it may be hard to sustain that with their state budget problems.
Well, I think the answer to your question is best supplied by people in the Industrial Relations Research Association. And I think they would suggest that they're not doing as well as they would like, that they've had problems in the last decade. But we still have 60 or 70 institutes, I guess, around the country with students. And the Industrial Relations Research Association has local chapters which are very alive, but they are mainly practitioners. And as a research field and as a scholarly field, it's sort of in a slight decline. Not a very cheerful outlook from the field in which we participate.
Exactly. And then Rutgers, I guess, would be another big program. Well, I feel a certain sadness because I came in, and when I arrived in January of 65, Ed Young got me, or somebody on the executive committee or whatever, and then Ed got me on the program for the December of 65. And so I've been involved, you know, in varying degrees for a long, long time, and, you know, had a great fondness for the openness of the program and the idea that, you know, there wasn't some kind of doctrinaire view of what the field was about. Whereas in economics, well, this is okay to do and that's not okay to do. It was more pressure, you might say, to conform to what the paradigm was. So I really enjoyed, you know, meeting and talking Ev Casalo and Barbanish, you, Jerry, interesting people.
Well, I think it was a stimulating program because of the inputs mm-hmm. from psychology,
exactly.
sociology, economics, yeah. law.
Mm-hmm.
We had faculty interaction of the type that you don't usually get.
Yeah.
Usually it's within a department.
Right.
Here we had basic across-departmental mm-hmm. interest.
Right.
I mean, somebody like Witte out of political science,
mm-hmm.
the people over in the law school, right. Jones, Klaus, Weisberg,
mm-hmm.
Feinzinger, Brody.
Mm-hmm.
We were all good friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was a vital and interesting program.
Mm-hmm.
But it has become now a field which is mainly taken over by business.
Right.
Or freestanding institute,
mm-hmm.
and doing a very good job of training people in these particular school programs.
Right.
But it's no longer looked upon as one which treats societal problems,
mm-hmm.
because unemployment is not the same problem it was
right.
50 years ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Other fields have sprung up.
Mm-hmm.
And take all the money.
Right, that's right, yes. And all these fields, neuroscience, which is mm-hmm. the new name, I guess, for psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have ever foreseen this?
No.
Well, Jim, I appreciate your willingness to talk and for this interview. And what I'll do is, I think that when I take these tapes to Barry Tyker, he has a grad student who goes through and makes an index of what's where, just to make it easier to use it. And then I will use this in trying to write something up about the Institute, and I'll run it by a number of people so it doesn't look like I'm going off the deep end. But I think it would be nice, I hate this word, bring closure to it in some sense.
Yeah, I think you're doing something that deserves great praise. You're spending time putting together the epitaph for the IR Institute.
Right. You know. We should maybe get a stone that we put along across the street from Bascom Hill,
uh-huh.
Bascom Hall.
Uh-huh.
Class of 1905, they would put these gravestone-like things out there.
Right. Yeah. Here lies the Institute.
Right.
Yeah, we started as a interdisciplinary committee degree. We went to a center. We went to an institute.
Mm-hmm.
We went to tenure track
mm-hmm.
Jointly with other departments,
mm-hmm.
but we never made that final
right.
step
yeah.
of independence.
Right.
And I think then as the field declined...
Yeah. Cause of death.
yeah, right. We declined.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.